Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. Happy December. Merry Christmas month. It is the Derek Hunter Show for the 1st of December, 2021. Happy Wednesday, hump day to you. I am Derek Hunter, the aforementioned and accurately and appropriately named under this circumstance, at least Derek Hunter, your host. Thank you for listening. It's just a mental note. I don't know. I recorded the show earlier today because I had some errands to run. I came home and Chris Cuomo had been suspended. And so you're like sitting there going, crap. Where is this? Well, I just thought I'd add an addendum to the beginning because that's the beauty of editing, ladies and gentlemen. That's the beauty of editing. Yes, we'll get to that in a second. First, let me take care of the business that needs to be done when I tell you about the CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com, the best 100% pure organic CBD oil. You can't beat it. CBD oil is all the rage. And it works. I actually started using the cream on my shoulder. I don't know what the hell's wrong with my... It's not even my throwing shoulder, which is weird. But it's my sleeping shoulder. And it feels like bursitis. And so I put a little bit of the cream, the CBD cream, on there at night. And it does the trick. It helps me get to sleep and sleep longer and sleep better. So go to AncientLifeOil.com. Check out the flavors. Check out the different solutions. Check out all the specials they have there. And then enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. Click apply, and you get free fast shipping on top of great stuff. AncientLifeOil.com. The stuff really works. It's 100% pure, organic, certified GMO-free CBD oil. All right. Don't forget about the Curse Program, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. That's where you enter to win either the Ben Carson book or the Seb Gorka book. Some people are making their decisions in the comment section. Other people are still pulling the "I'll take either one" sort of thing. Well, I'll pick for you if that's what you want. It'll make it a surprise, but it's much better if you choose yourself. Patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. Just mere $5 a month helps support the program. Okay, now let's talk about Chris Cuomo, because this is a big deal. It took him long enough. It's amazing what you have to do in order to get suspended by CNN. Mediaite has the story. CNN suspended Chris Cuomo indefinitely on Tuesday, one day after New York State Attorney General's office released transcripts showing the extent of his involvement in assisting his brother, then Governor Andrew Cuomo, as he faced multiple allegations of sexual assault. Anderson Cooper will fill in for Cuomo on Tuesday night, CNN said. Mediaite, this is the full statement from CNN on the matter. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this just because as it digests more, and I'm not really sure how long this will last. It could be a couple of weeks. It could be forever. Who knows? The CNN statement is, quote, "The New York Attorney General's office released transcripts and exhibits Monday that shed new light on Chris Cuomo's involvement in his brother's defense. The documents, which we were not privy to before their public release, raised serious questions. When Chris admitted to us that he had offered advice to his brother's staff, he broke our rules, and we acknowledge that publicly. But we also appreciated the unique position he was in and understood his need to put family first and job second. However, these documents point to a greater level of involvement in his brother's effort than we previously knew. As a result, we have suspended Chris indefinitely, pending further evaluation." What will that mean? Will he be back? He's the only person on CNN that gets any kind of audience. He's their top person over there. I I sort of agree with what Tucker said about you're supposed to defend your brother, you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. I get it. The problem isn't that he did it, that he tried to help his brother. It's that he had tried to help his brother in so many ways, in every political way possible, up to and including this. That was the real problem, that he was allowed to interview his brother, that CNN... It's like, the parents who let the kids smoke and let the kids drink. And then suddenly, when something bad happens, they go, I can't believe you smoked and drank. What are you doing? Like, you did this. You allowed it. You allowed things up to this point that I'm now smoking weed shouldn't surprise you. You let me have your cigarettes. That's the way I look at it. So, in any event. I just wanted to comment on that so it didn't seem like this whole thing was completely out of date. I don't think I spend that much time talking about Chris Cuomo. I actually spend more time saying things that'll probably make people mad, but going into this program before we get to the program, since I'm redoing the intro, when I mention certain people in the program today, I am not attacking them personally. I am not making a value judgment on them personally, or saying they should shut up, they have no right to their opinion. Obviously, I think everybody has a right to their opinion. That's my job, is my opinion. I'm saying that their opinion is not news. It's not news. It's not anywhere close to news. And I would like some news from my news. It would be like ordering a steak and getting a brick of tofu. Like, all right, well, I didn't order tofu. If I wanted tofu, I'd order tofu. There are plenty of tofu joints around here. I want a damn steak. That's what I'm talking about. I wouldn't have a problem with it. Again, if you can tell, I go off on cable news a lot. But I could easily do without cable news. The world, if they just dropped the news part of their name, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Anyway, with that explanation, I think it's all clear, although some people will still get mad and think, you're personally attacking this person or that person. Like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. It's not about them. It's about the concept of cable news. Anyway, I've overexplained it. Let's get on with the program. We've got a lot of things to get to today. It's, you know, it's never for a shortage of things going on in the world. We've got Mayor Pete telling, you know, remember when Joe Biden said, buy a shotgun? Joe Biden, he was dumb. He is dumb. But he was just trying to offer a simple solution. Hey, you don't need to buy an AR-15. Just buy a shotgun. Joe Biden's pick for Secretary of Transportation, Secretary Mayor Pete, says, well, just if you don't like gas prices, buy yourself an electric vehicle. Look, if you can't afford $4 gas, then you could easily afford a $45,000 car and you won't have to deal with it. Which, by the way, isn't free to fill up. It isn't free to charge your battery. But, hey, what the hell does the Secretary of Transportation know? Why should he be expected to know stuff? Don't you realize he's just a box checker like 95% of the members of the cabinet? So we have that audio coming up. Peter Ducey is at it again. Conducting journalism, or at least attempting to conduct journalism in the White House press briefing, being it's not welcome there. It is not welcome there, journalism. They're unfamiliar with the concept, so they see it, and they don't know what's going on. They get a little scared. They get a little angry, and they run off and tattle on each other. So we'll get to that, and then Chris Cuomo is, my God. The only way to get fired from CNN is to not be vaccinated. That's it. They fired three people for not being vaccinated. They didn't fire Jeffrey Toobin for dropping trowel and TCBing on a Zoom call, or impregnating the daughter of a colleague while married, trying to force her to get an abortion, badger and bully her into getting an abortion. That wasn't a fireable offense at CNN. And Chris Cuomo lying to his audience repeatedly. Not a fireable offense. But you don't get the jab and you're out. So we'll get to all of that and more. There's a lot more going on in the world today than meets the eye. And I probably a controversial choice, but I want to start with this out of Ottawa, Canada, because You think, well, it's those damn Canadians. And, you know, by and large, you're right. It's those damn Canadians because it is those damn Canadians. However, stupidity spreads like a cold on a plane. And I tell you this all the time because it's true. If California, some city in California, does something wildly progressive and incredibly stupid, and you sit there and we all go, look at what San Francisco is doing. And you can look at what San Francisco is doing, and that would be your first natural reaction. But you have to recognize now, you know, it's been years, decades, really, of this pattern. That as you sit there and point and laugh and go, can you believe those nut jobs out in California are doing X, Y, or Z? That there's some nut job in your state government or your city government that it looks at that and goes, why didn't I think of that? I will not be out progressived. I will, you know, they can't be first because the crazy has already been done, but they're damn sure not going to be last. And so they then start to push through something very similar, equally as stupid. And you sit there and you go, wait, how did this happen when it becomes law? It's because you were too busy, we were all too busy laughing at what San Francisco just passed, or what New York City just passed, or what happened in Australia. I think that'll never happen here. There are people actively, desperately scrambling to get whatever happens anywhere. Now, if it's progressive left-wing lunacy, desperately trying to bring it here to the United States of America, they will do it in places like California or New York, Vermont, places like that. And then they will set about trying to impose it nationally. Just how it works. They don't usually skip the local step before they go national, but maybe they will at some point. But this one comes to us from Canada. And it will creep. Look, Ottawa's just literally across the river, the Detroit River, from Michigan. I grew up going over there, especially when I turned 19, because you can legally drink in Canada when you're 19 years old. Did I say that out loud? Sorry. Anyway, this comes to us from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. We've seen similar things to this in the United States, but it's usually from colleges. It's usually from left-wing organizations, groups, the ethnic-based, the race-based groups that they love to get back into tribes. They're always spearheaded and organized and pushed by white people, but it's on behalf of, you know, they're very good at being white liberals are very good at being offended on behalf of other people. Usually people they know nothing about, no members of that group, but they're offended on behalf of them and they demand action and justice. Like, look at the Redskins name. Every poll shows that the actual Native Americans go, no, we don't want to change the name. We like it. But those white suburbanite liberals, oh, no, you don't understand. You're so brainwashed. You're so brainwashed that you don't realize how offensive it is to you. And so we are going to plow ahead anyway, regardless, on your behalf. We're heroes. Make the check out to cash. Anyway, the government of Ottawa and the BBC, or the CBC, which is the BBC of Ottawa, they've got this story over there, the CBC of Ottawa. Now imagine, actually, you can't imagine an American media outlet doing this. It won't be long, matter of months, I suspect. The headline, the CBC, words and phrases you may want to think twice about using. Yeah, you may want to think twice about using these words because they're offensive. They could be offensive. They said on Twitter, have you ever casually used the term spirit animal? First world problems or spooky, it might be time to rethink your use of those phrases and remove them from your daily lingo. Actually, no, I never have casually used those terms or other offensive terms. I've deliberately done so, purposefully, with the intent, the hope, the fervent dream to trigger as many leftists as humanly possible into weeping, crying, running away with the tail between their legs, whatever it is, because to hell with these people. To hell with them. The story, historical cultural context, says, have you ever casually used the term spirit animal, first world problem, spooky? It might be time to rethink your use of those phrases and remove them from your daily lingo. CBC Ottawa compiled a small list of words submitted by readers and some of our journalists who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Wouldn't people of color encompass all of them? Why in their segregation do they even segregate, subdivide? You know, like, oh, people of color and Black and Indigenous people. Well, theoretically, Black and Indigenous people would be of color, would they not? Well, no, they're special. See, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others, you see. Well, talk to me once you, if you're a part of the Professor Anne Marianne, the and the rest in the Gilligan's Island song, if you're a part of that group, talk to me once you reach a substantial percentage of the voting population. Then we will break you out. Then we will pretend to care about you as much as we care about or pretend to care about Black and Indigenous people. Otherwise, just get back into the people of color boat and shut your mouths. Continues, we ran some of the words by anti-racist and language experts who said some of these phrases can be hurtful to various groups of people for their historical and cultural context. I guarantee you that not a single person, real human being, not paid to be a part of the grievance industry, gives a damn about your use of any of these words or terms. They just don't. They never will. It doesn't matter. Most people don't sit there and go, I know the etymology of this phrase, and therefore it is offensive. Nope. People just hear it, know what the hell you're talking about, and move on. Because they got better things to do. They have real world issues, real world problems to deal with. They don't have time to play this we're out of problems as a society, let's find some, let's make some up game. Quote, being an English speaker doesn't entail that you necessarily know the racist etymology automatically, said I Taniguchi, whatever. Taniguchi, a linguist, an associate language studies professor with the University of Toronto, in an email to the CBC. Etymology is the study of words and the way their meanings change over time. Quote, the fact that you said it, oblivious to the etymology, doesn't automatically make you a bad person. I'm aware of the etymology of first world problems. I just don't give a damn that somebody is offended. If you are a soft-skulled leftist who has serious self-esteem issues and an inferiority complex rivaling any throughout history, a Napoleonic complex that is only named Napoleonic complex because the world doesn't know of you, I don't care. Why should I care? Why should anybody give a damn? What you do once you find out a word is racist, sexist, or ableist that doesn't seem right. Is sexist, ableist, racist etymology carries more importance, she explained. Quote, I didn't know it was racist, does not eliminate the pain of the hearer, said Taniguchi. As language users, we have the social responsibility to monitor the impact our utterances have on others, especially when it involves a marginalized group. There you go. There's your white savior complex. I don't know what Taniguchi is or whatever the hell her name is, but she can be inflicted with white savior complex anyway. She clearly is. Look at the marginalized community. I'm surprised she doesn't say, carry a lollipop around in your pocket for members of the marginalized community. And then when you're offended on behalf of them, when they are not offended on their own behalf, but you recognize that they should be, give them a lollipop, pat them on the head, and say, don't worry. Don't worry, off-white person. I've got you. I will protect you from the words you don't see as offensive. My God. How pathetic are these people? Anti-racism trainer Jas Kalra, K-A-L-R-A, agrees. Ooh, shocking. A leftist agrees with a leftist. Are all the presses stopped now? Somebody hit that button to stop all the presses. Quote, It's not so much about political correctness. I think it's about the empirical accuracy. And if somebody really calls us out on a particular word, we need to stop and say, it's not about me, says Calra, who runs Ottawa-based Jazz Carla Consulting, because nobody else would hire her. Who the hell would hire her? They'll contract with her. Corporations will contract with her. But no right-minded human being would ever hire her. And coaches people and organizations on inclusion and diversity. Oh, yes. Inclusion and diversity. Sit down and shut up. You're the wrong skin color. We're trying to be inclusive. We're trying to celebrate diversity. You're the wrong... Oh, wait. There's a black... No, there's a black conservative. You shut up, too. You might as well be white. We're trying to be tolerant here. Don't you understand? Now sit down and shut up and learn your damn place. Quote, the issue here is that they're all negative terms, said Joseph Smith, an anti-racism trainer and educator. It connotes evil, distrust, lack of intelligence, ignorance, a lack of beauty, the absence of white. He's talking about the words blackmail, blacklist, and black sheep. Don't use them. Those are now banned by the CBC up in Canada because they might hurt marginalized communities. The lowering of blackness on the spectrum with regards to the value it was developed further in the wake of the transatlantic slave trade, but it also predates that, Smith explained. Yeah, what does it say about the transatlantic slave trade that the African end of the transatlantic slave trade was run by Africans? Huh? The capturing and sale of slaves from Africa was done by Africans. Quote, black became associated with a particular group of people, and that group of people received all negative connotation. That's why we try to move away from these kind of terms, end quote. According to Joseph Smith, I don't know what he looks like, there's no picture of him, but I'm just picturing a snowstorm. This is how the left functions. Don't use that word. It's offensive. They try to pressure you and don't use that word. And then those who refuse to comply will then begin to be ostracized and be penalized. It is about destruction and control, ultimately. Destruction of political opponents and control over everybody. This article from the CBC continues. You've already learned that black male, blacklist, and black sheep are not allowed, but ghetto and inner city also must be struck from your vocabulary. We have ways of making you talk or not use these words. They write of ghetto and inner city. Smith says terms like ghetto and inner city grew out of the Industrial Revolution in North America. The word ghetto also has a painful historical root in Europe during the Holocaust and was likely derived from Jewish settlements in Italy centuries ago. See, they don't even know. It's likely derived from this, but just in case, let's be offended and end it. Says, quote, ghetto and inner cities were typically seen as places where less refined people lived. The people who weren't up to date culturally, development-wise, he said. Oh, no. And? Meanwhile, in the late 1900s onward, the political rhetoric and media representation showed suburbs as pleasant, quiet, and gentle areas, while inner city was seen as dangerous and risky, he explained. I hate to point it out to Mr. Smith as he goes to Washington or whatever, but that's kind of the truth. It remains the same. Downtown Baltimore, and you just pick a suburb. Pick any suburb. Pick anywhere else in the state of Maryland. You got it. Chicago. Okay. Anywhere not Chicago. All right. Which one has less people shot? Using the term implies a negative connotation towards people of a certain socioeconomic class, often associated with racialized groups, typically those who have recently immigrated and often moved to large metropolis areas and not suburbs, he said. Well, first of all, you have no idea what you're talking about. I bet that Mr. Smith is not down with whatever immigrants are doing these days. He just saw a movie. He saw Coming to America and thought, well, there you go. That's the policy we shall go with. I love these leftists. They know. They're ready to be offended on behalf of you. They're like the Ghostbusters, except they're not ready to believe you. They're ready to disbelieve you when you say you're not offended by this stuff and you've never really thought about it. Next, we just had Halloween not that long ago. The term spooky has to go. Now, I grew up and had a dog named Spooky, too. I recorded a series of cassette tapes called The Spooky Ordeal, which described the fight between my dog and Mr. Big, who was trying to take over the world. So this one strikes close to home because apparently I was committing a hate crime back then by calling our dog Spooky. He's all black except for a white patch on his chest. And he whined. Like, we had come home and he's, ah, if you plugged his nose, I swear his head would have exploded. Anyway, they write, the term spook, used sometimes to refer to a ghost spy or something that's strange or frightening, often used during Halloween, has a history of being an anti-black slur when white soldiers began calling fellow black soldiers as spooks during World War II. Quote, it's offensive because of who and what it's applied to. Okay, well, what if it's not applied to them? It doesn't matter, it's offensive. So stupid. He reminds people a lot is packed into certain terms you use flippantly. Quote, Mr. Smith again, quote, there's a history behind it, and there's also all these connections that are made to other groups, he said. It's almost like these terms have tentacles that spread and attach themselves to other things and infect. Now, that's describing liberalism. That's describing progressivism. And the tentacles you're describing, you're talking about, are the metastasization of your insanity, my friend. That's what it is. Next, got to get rid of Sold Down the River, which I think has been used in songs a whole bunch, so that's got to go. The phrase, now used to mean somebody profoundly betrayed or jeopardized one's position, is directly connected to the transatlantic slave trade, Smith said. Quote, the problem with it, we use it in lots of spaces. The negative connotation is hearkening back to a time when enslaved African people would literally be sold down the Mississippi River for profit and seen as chattel objects that could be used or disposed of at the whims of their slave owners. Yeah, we all know that. Who are the original slave owners? Who sold these slaves into slavery into the transatlantic slave trade? Don't talk about that. Don't talk about that. Linguist Tanguchi says, once we learned the painful history behind phrases like these, we need to commit to being sensitive to others' experiences. I will be sensitive. Every slave I come across who has been sold down the river, I will make sure that I do not use the phrase sold down the river around them. Otherwise, it's game on. Quote, and this is Tanguchi, quote, language, communication, and free speech are valuable, but these things cannot come at the cost of endangering someone else's rights and pursuit of happiness. How do you endanger anybody else's rights by using a phrase? How do you endanger their pursuit of happiness? If your pursuit of happiness and your rights are that fragile, particularly your pursuit of happiness, because your rights are pretty well rib-rocked, but your rights stop where my rights begin. But if your pursuit of happiness is so fragile, if your psyche is so fragile, that a phrase like sold down the river has the possibility of really rocking your world and ruining your day and your life, really? Tough. Don't leave your house. You should never leave your house. You should not engage in communication with any other human being whatsoever because it will not end well for you. It cannot end well for you. There is something fundamentally wrong with you. The only person you should have any communication with is your therapist, and that contact should be constant until you're able to act like an adult and get over yourself. Next is grandfathered in. Grandfather, don't use it. What are you doing? What are you doing using grandfather, the grandfather clause? How dare you? Likewise, the phrase grandfathered in, modernly referred to as someone or a business being exempt from new rules and continuing to operate as is, dates back to a 19th century policy called the Grandfather Clause, which indirectly stopped black Americans from voting by limiting eligibility to only those whose ancestors could vote. Quote, it's also, I had no idea about that, by the way. And I still don't care. Quote, it's also speaking to the patriarchy, a patriarchic family having supreme power over how things operate and manifest, and them possessing all the power and autonomy to make decisions and dictate the course of the future, said Smith. Oh, because it's grandfather. Maybe it's grandparent clause would be better. God, jump in a river from a really high bridge. It's re-inscribing the idea of male-dominated society to our world. Quote, at a meeting, let's say you said grandfathered in. You had no idea that it had racist roots. If a black person asks you not to use that term, then don't, says Tanguchi. No. Go chase yourself. How's that? Is that? Am I allowed to say that? I'd like to say a lot worse. My God, imagine being this offended. You have to literally, the amount of calories burned desperately trying to be offended on this issue and issues like this are enormous, which is amazing because everybody in this article is fat, which I don't understand. Like, how can you possibly be this fat, but burning all these calories looking for ways to be offended? Next, we have spirit animal, powwow, and tribe. Oh, yes, the tribe has spoken. That's cancel survivor, okay? Given the historical and current oppression of indigenous communities by... There's current oppression of indigenous communities? Why? How? Because there's only one position of casino manager? You're free to leave the reservation all you want. You're free to do whatever the hell you want. You get a free ride to college. You're taken care of. The oppression is in your head. The oppression is imposed on you by the left. And all the limitations on you are imposed on you by the people who are there telling you the loudest that they only want to help. Given the history and current oppression of indigenous communities by settlers, explained Tanguchi, metaphors English speakers casually use, such as spirit animal, let's have a powwow and tribe, can be a painful insult to indigenous communities. Oh no, a painful, maybe that's why every time I say let's have a powwow about it, the closest Native American to me immediately falls down in the fetal position and starts sobbing uncontrollably. I am engaging in my whiteness. Ignore this, because that's what we do, right? Am I right? I'm right. Good God. Quote, it's a reminder that their past and culture have always been treated as insignificant by settlers. I love it. You can't honor a culture that isn't yours because you're engaged in cultural appropriation. But if you ignore a culture that isn't yours, you are guilty of cultural genocide or something. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Spirit animal has become a term of endearment described someone who the speaker deeply relates to or loves, explained anti-racism facilitator Calra. Some acronyms can be alter ego, idol, or soulmate. So there you go. There's your soulmate. Use that. However, she notes, spiritual connection and reverence for nature and ancestors is deeply rooted across indigenous cultures. Yeah, they're the only ones. The sweet, sweet Native Americans, they're the only ones who don't advocate for pouring mercury into the drinking water and salting the earth so no crops can ever be grown again. So that's why, you know, learn your place, everybody else. And the phrase itself turns that concept into casual catchphrase that isn't widely used or even used at all among indigenous people. The same idea that applies to using tribe and powwow, used to say, let's gather, casually in conversation by someone who's not indigenous. So you're going to be issued dictionaries now, thanks to the left, based on your skin color. Quote, if a non-Indigenous person says, this is my tribe, I don't think it's okay, despite the fact that they're using it, presumably, in a metaphorical way, says Tenguchi. I don't think that's okay. You can't also say lowest on the totem pole, which I say all the time. And to hell with these people, I'm going to keep saying it. Totem poles are sacred items, much like headdresses in Indigenous cultures, explained Carla, who's not Native American. Who, why the hell would she know? All right. So it's, you can't just say, hey, that's a carved tree. No, that's sacred. You can desecrate a cross and dip it in urine with the funding from the federal government and call it art, but do not desecrate the totem pole. Don't even say the word totem pole and or headdress at all. Boy, Cher's entire 1970s is a hate crime, I think. The phrase lowest on the totem pole, casually meaning something is less important, not only is culturally appropriating the totem pole, but it's contextually wrong. Quote, in some First Nation communities, being carved low on the totem pole might actually be a great honor, she said. When you're culturally appropriating somebody's cultural symbols, you're saying that marginalized members of society are free for taking. Yeah, I love how she says, it might mean this. Well, does it? Why don't you cite an example? Because you don't know. You're in the business of being offended. You're not in the business of being clear. You're not in the business of, you know, making sense, backing up your points with anything. No. It just might also be this way. And then who cares? If being carved lowest on the totem pole is a sign, a symbol of honor, then the Native Americans who know that, and I'd bet that most of them don't. And by the way, if these things are so sacred, having been somebody who worked in a state with a lot of Indian reservations and gone to a lot of Indian reservations when I was working for the senator from Montana, if these things are so sacred that we can't even talk, we can't even use the terminology, maybe... just maybe, and I'm going to throw this out there, and you can decide for yourself, but maybe, just maybe, don't sell them at the tourist traps on the side of the road on your reservations, all right? And if the totem pole and headdresses are so sacred that you can't even, don't even look at them, don't even think about them, don't even acknowledge they exist, then maybe having a, you know, 25% off sale today only on these most sacred of things in all of the world isn't necessarily a good thing. Or maybe these leftists are just making stuff up and they don't know what they're talking about and they fall into that I'm offended on behalf of somebody else category. That's just me. Having seen many of these things for sale, these sacred things, don't talk about a dream catcher, but you can get this one for $12. Yeah. How dare you culturally appropriate the dream catcher, but would you like a buy one, get one free deal on the dream catchers? They're so sacred to me that they're 50% off in our clearance section today and today only. Yeah. leftists. I'm looking at this. The whole show could be this article. It really is long. So I'll try to remember this for tomorrow, and we'll pick up, where did we leave off? We left off at lowest on the totem pole. A sneak preview for tomorrow is savage. Savage. You're not allowed to use savage anymore. So there you go. We'll pick that up tomorrow. And we'll move on to other things, including Mayor Pete. You know, you can tell somebody has lived a pretty charmed, insulated life when they, there's a picture. I don't even know if it's true or not, if it's a real picture or if it's photoshopped. I have to imagine it's photoshopped, but it wouldn't surprise me if it were true. But there was a picture going around on social media yesterday, older picture of Paris Hilton wearing a skirt and a white t-shirt, her arms up. She's on stage in front of a big crowd of people and with clothes on for once. And it says, stop being poor. I can't imagine she actually has a shirt that says stop being poor, but it's also believable that she would have a shirt that says stop being poor. Secretary Mayor Pete is a lot like Paris Hilton. He grew up, with some money. He grew up a privileged lifestyle. Father was a communist college professor, of course, because that's what they are. And he basically now is trying to tell poor people that you just buy, if you don't like gas prices, you can't afford $4 for gas, drop $50,000 on an electric vehicle. That'll solve your problems. So Secretary Mayor Pete, he was in Baltimore over the weekend. It's amazing how the guy who's in charge of the ports, guys, has a massive impact on the supply chain, can give an interview. And it's a testament to John. I think it's not Jonathan Chait. It's some other Jonathan. Left-wing Jonathans are so hard to keep track of. But some other Jonathan, can't remember. It'll come to me. Anyway, he was up in Baltimore, and he's also a columnist for the Washington Post, this Jonathan. But he sat down for an interview with MSNBC, because, of course, everybody who works for the Washington Post also gets an MSNBC contract, provided they aren't complete ugly chuds. There are quite a few of them. But they get a contract over there as well, because they're all on the same team, and they just love to throw money at each other. And in the course of his press availability and his interview, Mayor Pete was extolling the virtues of electric vehicles. See, Mayor Pete's given out money. Up in Baltimore, they want to put in more bus lanes. When I lived in Baltimore, I was there when the bus lanes first came in. The bus lanes and then the bike lanes. And it was the worst time ever. I'd just gotten a car. I'd just gotten my first car. I'd lived in Baltimore for 13 years. I didn't have a car for 12 of those years. Couldn't afford one. Finally get a car, and then they start blocking off huge chunks of traffic because why? I don't know why. Because they wanted, the bike lanes, they want you to ride a bike. Well, Baltimore isn't the Deep South. Baltimore gets a winter. Bike lanes are good for 8 months out of the year because it also rains a lot. So then what do? The rest of the time, you've just taken up one of three lanes in a road that was already heavy with traffic. So now, in the name of green energy, you've created more idling time. You also moved the parking out away from the curb, which is really awkward. Just all sorts of stupid things that are done in the name of the environment. So stupid. Plus the bus lanes downtown. Like, you want to get traffic moving because otherwise you're just idling and wasting time. But you also want to encourage people to take the bus. So if we give a bus its own lane, people will take the bus because you'll get there faster than driving because we just screwed up traffic. And see, if we screw up traffic enough and then part traffic like the Red Sea for the bus-only lane, then we'll get more people to take the bus. And guess what? People don't want to take the bus. It's not that, it's just so inconvenient, although it is just so inconvenient to take the bus. You've got to take four transfers to get where you're going, as opposed to just driving there. But also, have you been on a city bus in any city ever? Would you eat a sandwich off your own lap on a city bus? I don't think you should. I don't think you should. I wouldn't. They are filled with crazy people, and they're filthy and dirty. And by the way, we also have a pandemic going on, in addition to cold and flu season. So you can sit there with somebody who's going through the DTs, blowing snot bubbles, having withdrawals, and coughing all over the place, but you're saving the planet. I mean, you're going to die tomorrow from God knows what they're exhaling on you and spitting on you, but you will think of all the money you'll save on gas. Yeah, it doesn't work out that way. The left really doesn't like that you like your cars because the left doesn't like the idea that you can go where you want to go when you want to go there. So we have Secretary Mayor Pete talking to the Washington Post MSNBC Jonathan Capehart. There it is. It just came to me. Jonathan Capehart. He's a man of color. He's a black man and he's gay. So he checks more boxes than Mayor Pete does. But they're having just a good old time having their little chat. And Pete had some advice for those of you out there who don't like $4 gas. Buy a shotgun. buy an electric car.
Give you one example. It contains incentives to make it more affordable to buy an electric vehicle, up to a $12,500 discount in effect for families thinking about getting an EV. Families that once they own that electric vehicle will never have to worry about gas prices again. The people who stand to benefit most from owning an EV are often rural residents who have the longest distances to drive, they burn the most gas, and underserved urban residents in areas where there are high gas prices and they're lower income. So they would gain the most by having that vehicle.
Yeah, no, and the batteries to replace in your electric car are just super cheap. No, but yeah, like $20. Oh yeah, no, that's not right. But I love it. We'll subsidize you up to $12,500 to buy an electric vehicle. Okay, well, an electric vehicle is $50,000, all right? But you're subsidizing $12,500. Great, that brings it down to what? Blah, 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 $30,750, roughly? $37,500, somewhere in there? Okay, you've subsidized. It's still more than, quote-unquote, poor people make per year. For a car. They also have to live somewhere. So how many poor people do you think are going to be lining up to get the bottom of the line Tesla or the Chevy Volt or any of these things? Not many. Now, there are a lot of rich people who would look at this and go, now's my time. I can virtue signal the hell out of life. I can go buy an electric Tesla or an electric Mercedes, or they all seem to have them now. I can buy an electric Hummer, and it'll be great, because the government, i.e. us, are going to be subsidizing rich people buying $100,000 electric vehicles, or even $50,000 electric vehicles. Rich people, they get $12,500 off. It's not off. We pay it. We pick up that check. So you're looking at the Mayor Pete, Secretary Mayor Pete, cheering, subsidizing rich people. Yeah, subsidizing rich people's vanity projects. And he doesn't seem to see that that's a problem, because you'll never have to buy gas again. All you'll have to do is pay to install a charging station in your home. It's a friend of mine has an electric vehicle, a Tesla, and it is. He says it costs about $25 to charge it at a super fast charging station, which means if it's, you know, near done, you can charge it in half an hour, which is wildly inconvenient, but you get 300 miles apparently to a charge. But in a half an hour, you can sit there and you got to pay $20 to $25. Now the cost of electricity is only going to continue to go up, because the cost of producing electricity is going to be artificially going up, thanks to government actions. And they want to make electricity even more difficult to create, not only more expensive, by banning coal-fired power plants. So again, you see all of these problems snowballing on top of each other, because that's what our government does when they quote-unquote try to solve a problem. But Mayor Pete doesn't know any of this, doesn't care about any of this, is oblivious to all of this, or whatever. It's only his job. Why should he be concerned about such things? He just continues talking to Jonathan Capehart about the virtues of people who can't afford to buy gasoline dropping money they don't have on a heavily subsidized electric vehicle.
But these are the very residents who have not always been connected to electric vehicles that are viewed as kind of a luxury item. If we can make an electric vehicle less expensive for everybody, more people can take advantage, and we'll be building and selling more American-made EVs, which means over time they'll become less expensive to make and to buy for everybody.
Yeah, it worked wonders for the college tuition business, didn't it? You know, like, if we make college more affordable by giving people money to go to college, then the cost of college will drop. Boy, it'll be amazing. It'll be wonderful. College has risen more than anything else. The cost of college more than the cost of anything else in the past 30 years. As government gets more and more involved. Because, you know, if you say, I'll give you $12,500 to go out and buy an electric vehicle, you know what? You know that the people who are buying those electric vehicles are already rich people, or already well-to-do people, or people who are willing to take on massive loans. You can pump up the price a little bit. There's no disincentive to pumping up the price. It's kind of like with Medicaid. See, states always expand their Medicaid when the federal, most states do. Dumb states do, but most states are dumb. They expand their Medicaid when the federal government's having a good time and they've got a lot of revenue. And they say, well, we'll incentivize expanding Medicaid because the local politicians in the state love expanding Medicaid. Why? Because they get to promise a dollar's worth of benefits for only 50 cents worth of cost. Costs are split for Medicaid between the state and the federal government. So you can promise somebody, I'll give you $5 worth of new benefits, and you really only have to pay for $2.50. It's wonderful. Politicians love that kind of stuff because if things are going well for the federal government and tax revenue streams, they usually are going well for the state governments too. So they don't have to break their own bank yet. They will in the future to get those promises through. So they can promise tons more than they actually have to deliver because the federal government is picking up the other half of that. If you subsidize something, you will get more of it, but you won't get it where you want it to. Somebody working at McDonald's is not going to be showing up in a Tesla, not going to be showing up in an electric vehicle. Plus, if you look at some of these neighborhoods, you put out electric charging stations out there. You can't put up new road signs. You can't put up a new mailbox without somebody taking a shot at it, somebody banging into it, whatever. How long do you think those expensive electric charging stations, car charging stations, the fast charging stations, are going to last? Especially when people realize the internal scrap value of the equipment and materials used to make those things. Just saying. I'm a cynical man, but I'm realistic. My cynicism is based in realism. We have one more. Mayor Pete then went to a press conference after talking to Jonathan Capehart and reiterated the poor should just buy, if they don't like gas prices, should just buy an electric vehicle line.
Yeah, we're very excited to begin work on the EV charging network that the president envisions, 500,000 chargers across the country, to make sure that in big, wide open spaces out west that you know that you can get a charge where you need one on a long trip, and in urban areas that are underserved, where people don't live in detached houses where you can just plug the car into your wall of your garage, that they have equitable access to. In fact, if you think about it, the two kinds of drivers who stand to benefit the most from electric vehicles are rural drivers who drive those long distances and burn a lot of gas, and lower income drivers in urban areas who would benefit the most from those fuel savings.
Yeah, they're going to benefit the most. The people least likely to want these things and have a use for them, they're absolutely going to benefit the most. No, they won't. And by the way, you can't just run an extension cord from your outlet in your garage to your electronic vehicle. You have to put in an expensive charging station and have the make sure that if you want to do it quickly, that you have enough juice flowing to it to be able to charge quickly, because there's all different speeds at which you can charge, the fastest being about a half an hour. Many of them are overnight. Not cheap, not free, not easy. Mayor Pete doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, but then again, does he ever? So let's talk about Fredo Cuomo, shall we? Fredo Cuomo, back in August. Back in August, Fredo swore to his audience of ever-dwindling morons. I apologize. I'm sure that his audience is not morons. I mean, actually, I don't mean that at all. But anyway, it is one of those situations where you just got to call it where, like it is. You have to. And the CNN audience is falling apart, completely falling apart. Well, anyway, he assured his audience back in August when it broke that he was working and coordinating with his brother, then the governor of New York, about the idea that he's going to take on these women. Take on these women who are accusing him of sexual harassment, sexual assault. Chris Cuomo's on the phone in strategy sessions, and he said, no, I was not involved in the strategy making. I was just there as an advisor because I love my brother. I love my brother. That's what he turns into Hulk Hogan from the mid-80s. My brother, I love my brother this, my brother that, my brother this, that, and the other thing. Well, now the attorney general of the state of New York, who really hates Andrew Cuomo, and always has, but is also under legal obligation to release this information because it is, you know, funded by the public. released more information yesterday, including text messages, between the chief strategist for Andrew Cuomo and his brother Chris. And it turns out that it wasn't just, hey, man, I'm only interested in these sorts of things and I'm just an impartial observer here. No. Chris Cuomo was an active participant. In fact, in many cases, the driving force. He also used his contacts as a quote-unquote journalist. You got to do that when talking about CNN. As a quote-unquote journalist, to dig up information about some of, at least one of, Cuomo's accusers. Yeah. CNBC has this. Now, NBC News was the only nightly newscast to report on this. And CNBC sort of broke this story, and it's, you know, they did a very thorough job. And you sit there and you go, wow, they're finally doing it. Now, if this were Fox, this would be all that these networks would be talking about. ABC, CBS didn't touch the story. They don't care. Chris Cuomo is a former employee of ABC News. He was also accused of groping his producer's butt at ABC News. And so they don't want to touch this story with a 10-foot pole. CBS doesn't care. There's nothing for them to gain in it. And that's how news is evaluated these days. Fox, of course, is all over this because they know that they'd be piled on if it happened to them. It has happened to them a whole lot of sexual assault and sexual harassment allegations around Fox, and CNN gleefully reports on that. So Fox turnabout is fair play. They're reporting on it. NBC News properties like CNBC, MSNBC, and NBC News itself, the nightly news, they're reporting on it because MSNBC is a direct competitor for the exact same audience that CNN is competing for. Radical leftists. So they want to destroy it. So that some people want to give NBC News credit for, oh, Lester Holt talked about this. He did it probably under pressure from the corporations. Realistically, a random news anchor being a jackass isn't necessarily newsworthy. It shouldn't be newsworthy. It is not news. It's just somebody who's a news personality saying something. I'll catch hell for this. But I've stopped. I can't watch any cable news anymore, except for Special Report with Bret Baier. I watched Tucker last night, and his monologue was great, an introduction. And then it gets to the point, and this is what I'm going to catch hell for, because I know she has a lot of fans. And you can be a fan of her, but you also have to recognize that what she has, her thoughts aren't news. Like, coming up, we've got Candace Owens talking about whatever it was. I don't know. Something. They always have her on to talk about something race-based. And I immediately grabbed the remote, and I switched to Below Deck reruns because I was like, I just don't care what Candace Owens has to say. And we shouldn't care what Chris Cuomo does. We shouldn't expect Chris Cuomo to have standards. He's not capable of it. He's not a journalist. Journalism doesn't exist anymore. There are no journalists left. There are activists with different agendas, period, end of story, and people with opinions. Sadly, people with opinions are treated as though they are newsmakers. The show before Tucker was on while I was cleaning up the basement, and they were like, oh, we're talking about, I forget what it was, something to do with a court case, somewhere nowhere near Texas. And like, oh, there's the radio host from Texas. Okay, well, why? Why not? Who knows? Because it's lazy booking. Don't watch cable news anymore, ladies and gentlemen. But Chris Cuomo, CNBC reports. CNN host Chris Cuomo used his sources in the media world to seek information on women who accused his brother, Andrew Cuomo, then the governor of New York, of sexual harassment, according to documents released Monday by the New York Attorney General's office. While Chris Cuomo had previously acknowledged advising his brother and his team on the response to the scandal, the records show that his role in helping the then governor was much larger and more intimate than previously known. Yeah, massive breach. And if you're going to call yourself a journalist, and they shouldn't, but if they're going to call themselves journalists, then you have to live by some semblance of journalistic ethics, don't you? Chris Cuomo was actively in touch with Melissa DeRosa, who was the then governor's top aide, about incoming media reports that detailed alleged sexual harassment by Andrew Cuomo, according to exhibits from the attorney general's probe and a transcript of his interview with the state's investigators. He also lobbied to help the governor's office as it sought to weather the storm of accusations, as he dictated statements for the then governor to use. Quote, "Please let me help with the prep," Cuomo said to DeRosa in one message in early March. Then, 3 days after the New York Times reported in March about how Andrew Cuomo attempted to kiss a woman, Anna Roche, in an unwanted advance at a wedding, Chris Cuomo texted DeRosa, quote, "I have a lead on the wedding girl. I have a lead on the wedding girl." CNN issued a comment hours after the publication of this article saying that the news organization would be reviewing the documents. Quote, "Thousands of pages of additional transcripts and exhibits were released today by the New York Attorney General. Deserve a thorough review and consideration," said spokesman Matt Dornick. "We will be having a conversation and seeking additional clarity about their significance as they relate to CNN over the next several days," which is code for, "We're going to wait and see if this thing blows over. If this blows over, you'll never hear of it again," which is just what the NBC News did with Joy Reid and her Islamophobic and homophobic old blog posts. We'll look into it. We're doing an internal investigation. What were the results? Doesn't matter. We reached out to the FBI. What happened there? Forget about it. She's on the network. Period. End of story. These people must have some massive dirt on their bosses. So you would think this story, a direct contradiction of the previously stated things about which Chris Cuomo lied to his audience, would be of special import. You know, if you are a news anchor on a cable news program, the trust you have with your audience is really all you have going for you. It's your currency, right? It's your currency. If you blow it, then that's on you. That's a problem for you. You have to try and do some damage control. You have to try and explain it. Well, he didn't. Last night on his program, he opened it without mention. He closed it without mention. Actually, let's listen to this. This is the handoff between Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo. They're clearly talking about it. Don Lemon is clearly alluding to it. But he can't come out and say it because he knows that Chris Cuomo doesn't want to talk about it. And they're all on the same page.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you, brother.
I know you had a great Thanksgiving. I hope you did. I missed you. I am grateful for your friendship and your love. I think that you are fantastic. One of the kindest people I know on this planet. There you go. I meant everywhere.
Well, I am thankful for you in my life. It was great to see you having a good time. I like the Friendsgiving tradition.
Yes.
For us, it was great to be in the house for the first time. And it was all good, man. One memory at a time. It's always better with you.
It's always better with you. It's all good, man. We love having you around here. You're so amazing. You're so wonderful. Chris Cuomo damaging himself and his reputation as a so-called journalist in the eyes of the few people who still view him as such. Presumably, they all watch CNN. And then he's not just damaging Chris Cuomo. He's damaging the brand of CNN in the eyes of the very few people who remain and watch CNN. Theoretically, realistically, if Don Lemon were at all interested in journalistic integrity, he would be furious at Chris Cuomo. You still got to play the handoff game. They started a podcast based on it. The network's identity is these two boobs talking to each other. So you got to play that game, but you don't have to play the game that way. Just goes to show you that journalistic integrity means nothing at CNN, because you really have to ask yourself, what do you have to do to be fired at CNN? All the things Chris Cuomo has done to this point hasn't done it. Jeffrey Toobin, pulling a Toobin. The Me Toobin moment didn't get him fired, just got him suspended for a while. Don Lemon is accused. There's a lawsuit right now of sexual assault and harassment against Don Lemon. He's on the air. In fact, the only thing that seems to get people fired from CNN is not getting vaccinated. CNN earlier this year fired three employees at their Atlanta headquarters for refusing to be vaccinated. Chris Cuomo won't face any firing. He doesn't get a million viewers, which is sad considering how many homes CNN is in. But he doesn't get a million viewers, but he's still the top-rated show on CNN. For his part, Brian Stelter, the human potato, you would think would be all over this since it's, you know, his beat. He is supposed to be the, his title is the chief media correspondent, an anchor of reliable sources on CNN. He's made one comment so far, one, on Twitter, in response to somebody who pointed out that Chris Cuomo didn't say anything about anything having to do with this latest development in a scandal. And if these shoes are dropped, who knows how many other shoes there are out there that could be a Payless shoe source ready to drop. In response to that, Stelter said, quote, "For what it's worth, when Chris Cuomo addressed his actions on the air back in August, he said, this will be my final word on it. And he hasn't addressed the matter on TV since." Well, Brian, you work down the hall from the guy. You're the media reporter. You're supposed to be the one brave enough to ask the questions, ask the serious questions, to step up, to be the running toward the fire guy, or walking briskly toward the fire. I don't think Brian Stelter can run. But he's not. He doesn't. He's a corporate shill, just like pretty much everybody else at CNN. It's about the agenda. It's about the narrative. Those two things must be protected, period, end of story. It's just funny to watch these people. They must be given free yoga classes over at CNN because they have to bend and twist themselves into amazing shapes to be able to look at themselves in the mirror every day without vomiting uncontrollably, I assume. Before we go on, I should clarify, because I know I'm going to catch hell, and I'm going to get the emails, and I know I'm going to get, well, you're blasting this person or that person or the other. I'm not blasting them. If they want to give their opinions and you want to hear their opinions, that's fine. It's just not news. That's the difference. It's not news. What somebody disconnected from a story, completely disconnected from a story, who just has opinions, thinks about a story is not news. It can be entertaining. It can be whatever. But if they're not giving you firsthand information or an I've been through this, I've been there, I know what this is, account of what is going on, it's essentially a conversation at a table next to you in a restaurant that if it weren't on television and it were happening in a restaurant, a table next to you, you'd ask to be moved. Like, can I go sit closer to the bathroom to get away from this, please? That's what would happen. So calling it news is not accurate. That's my problem with it. There was a time, and I make this point often, and I think I made this point in my book. Back, it had to be 2009 or 2010, when Andrew Breitbart launched the Big Government website. Big Hollywood was already up and launched. Big Government was edited by my good friend Mike Flynn. And he used to work, I was at the Daily Caller at the time. He used to come over to the Daily Caller offices and steal our Wi-Fi before there was a website. They broke the story. They broke the website there. They started the website with the Acorn story, right? The Acorn story was a huge story. Now, like a month before, probably like 3 weeks, 2 weeks before that, Mike was showing me and Tucker and Neil Patel, who's the publisher of the Daily Caller, he was showing us these videos. The Daily Caller didn't exist either yet. It's still just an idea. It didn't even have the name. But he showed us these videos. I was like, wow, this is great stuff. You're just going to flood the zone? Like, no, we're going to release one at a time. And he explained why, because they'll deny it. And then they can say, they'll say it's a one-time thing, one person, isolated incident. And then they'll release another one. And they'll go, that was also a one-time thing, isolated incident, blah, blah, blah. And they would just go on from there, and it would destroy Acorn. Andrew was brilliant at strategy like that. Well, they launched it with the first one that was here in Baltimore, Acorn, the guy telling James and Hannah how to import teenage girls for underage sex slavery. And no problems at all. No problems at all doing that. And I forget what show it was. I can't remember what show it was, but it was a Fox show. Not sure. It might have been Glenn Beck. It might have been something else. But they had on Andrew Breitbart and Mike Flynn, the publisher of Big Government and the editor-in-chief of Big Government, to discuss the story. The only people closer to the story was the guy at Acorn, which he's not going to be doing interviews, and James and Hannah themselves. So it got two people closest to the story. And they spent about 5 minutes talking to him about the story. And then they said, all right, now they let them go. Why? I don't know. And they let them go and said, for reaction, we turned to, and it was, I think it was Jedediah Bela and Essie Cupp. And I'm like, what? Why would you let go two people responsible for bringing the story to light? Two people who know the story better than anybody else. And why would you say, all right, you guys can go. I'm going to turn for reaction. We're going to turn to two people completely uninvolved in the story who know nothing more than anybody else in the world. We're going to get rid of people who know more than everybody else in the world. And we're going to turn to people who know nothing about it. And that was sort of an anomaly at the time in cable news, but now it's the norm. Except they don't do the first part where they actually talk to the people directly involved in the story, and then for reaction turn to people who are not involved in the story. They just skip the talk, and then they just say, all right, well, here's the gist, and we're going to argue it out with two people who aren't related to the story. Which means you're getting less information. At least back when Andrew and Mike were on talking about the Acorn story in Baltimore, you got 5 minutes of information that was direct and useful and intelligent information. Then you got 10 minutes of two women who were desperate for cable news contracts giving their opinions about something they knew nothing about. And they had no idea what was coming next. They had no idea the extent to it. They'd watched the videos, but they'd probably only watched a cut-up version of the video. They were, you know, read a summary of the stories. It was just pathetic. And so when I see that is what cable news has become, it frankly ticks me off. I want information. As somebody in college, I used to listen or watch cable news constantly while I was doing my homework. And you could, believe it or not, back then, way back in the dark ages of 1998-99, you could watch MSNBC and CNN and Fox, and there wasn't a whole lot of difference during the day between the two. And frankly, at night, it was still pretty good. I would watch Hardball at 5 o'clock and then sometimes watch it again at 11 o'clock. During the Clinton impeachment saga, I think a lot of times it was two different shows rather than just rerunning it. You could get new information. Chris Matthews was a tolerable leftist who would bring on guests like who disagreed with him, who knew things. Christopher Hitchens, that's where I first became, you know, a big fan of Christopher Hitchens, would go on there and decimate Chris Matthews constantly. But he kept having him back because Christopher Hitchens would tell Chris Matthews things he didn't know. He would bring in information, original reporting. Christopher Hitchens had sources. He knew things. He had first-hand experience in all of this. Now, you flip on any of these cable networks, and it is a contributor talking to a contributor. It is a paid staffer talking to another paid staffer. What in the hell does that have to do with anything? What can you possibly learn from, you know, a Saturday morning host being interviewed for a temporary fill-in host on a primetime show? What can you possibly learn? What does that person know? Nothing. They have opinions. Nothing wrong with having opinions, but opinions are like things that we all have, as the old saying goes. So when I sit there and I point out somebody or something, you know, is a waste of time on cable news, it's not an attack on them. It's an attack on cable news, a criticism of cable news. Some of these people I know, some of these people I don't know. Some of them I'm sure are perfectly fine people. Others of them I know for a fact are really bad people. But I don't. As long as they're not telling you how to live, I don't care what they do in their private lives or how fraudulent they are. It is a matter of I want information. We need an informed public only helps conservatives, only helps conservatism. An informed public is a conservative public. And we don't have an informed public, in part because of that kind of garbage. Because instead of taking the opportunity to educate people, to give people information, let them draw their own conclusions, however you want to look at it, instead you're getting, I don't know, the opinion of some blowhard contributor whose turn it was. If you think I'm being mean on Candace Owens, I'm not singling out her. It just so happens that she was the one. I will tell you this. Watch Tucker next Monday. Candace Owens will be on. She's been on for the past, I don't know, 10 Mondays at least. So watch. Whatever happens, she's already booked. Other people, you can do the same thing with any cable news show and any cable news guest. They will be already booked for they're on a specific day of the week. If you can look at that and think that's news somehow, we just disagree on what constitutes news. Because that ain't news. That's just, I don't know, it's entertainment. Sort of, I guess, if you're entertained by that. Anyway, speaking of news and entertainment, there is one person out there in the entire White House press corps who is engaging in journalism, who is asking, you know, these aren't even really tough questions. They're more obvious questions. And they're certainly questions that would have been asked repeatedly during the Trump administration. But they aren't being asked now. I told you yesterday when the travel ban was announced by Joe Biden that he's blocking off 7 African countries in southern Africa. That, you know, Donald Trump, he called Donald Trump's travel ban racist, xenophobic, horrible, awful, awful, awful. Well, now that he's instituting, you know, that was from China. And now that he's instituting a travel ban based in basically 95, 99% black countries, why is that not xenophobic? Why is that not racist? Peter Doocy was the only one to point out the hypocrisy of all this track record from Joe Biden on this issue. And Ginger Goebbels mumbles things together. What Ginger Goebbels does in her response, well, actually, I'll tell you after her response.
Before Joe Biden was president, he said that COVID travel restrictions on foreign countries were hysterical xenophobia and fear-mongering. So what changed?
Well, I would say first, to put it in full context, Peter, what the president was critical of was the way that the former president put out, I believe, a xenophobic tweet and how he called what he called the coronavirus and who he directed it at. The president has not been critical of travel restrictions. We have put those in place ourselves. We put them in place ourselves in the spring. But no, he does not believe. He believes we should follow the advice of health and medical experts. That's exactly what he did in putting in place these restrictions over the weekend.
By the way, the southern border is still wide open. But the idea that, oh, no, 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 he was talking about this horrible xenophobic tweet that she couldn't even bring herself to say that Donald Trump tweeted out that it was the China virus. The problem is, aside from this, the general stupidity of what she's saying there, the problem is Donald Trump's travel ban was announced on January 31st, January 31st of 2020. Joe Biden on February 1st, the next day, denounced it as xenophobic and horribly racist. And wow, the tweet to which Ginger Goebbels was referring to there about calling it the China virus didn't happen until March. Didn't happen until March. So Joe Biden wasn't condemning Donald Trump by calling his travel ban xenophobic and racist and horrible because a tweet that happened 2 months later, unless Joe Biden can see into the future, which is entirely possible. It would explain why he walks around in the present so confused all the time, is that his eyes are seeing the future. And he's just lost. He's like seeing everybody, oh, you're going to do this in 2 months. It's one. Then maybe that would explain why he's confused all the time. But more likely the explanation is Ginger Goebbels is lying. The White House is lying. And their simple, honest answer, if they were to give an honest answer, which they're not going to, but if they were to give an honest answer, the answer to the question of why is it different when Joe Biden does it is because it is. That's what it would be, because it is. Period, end of story. We said it. It's bad when Donald Trump does it. It's good when we do it. Period, end of story. It sounds stupid. It sounds childish. Only because it is stupid and only because it is childish. But it's also the way that this media, this White House, this version of the Democratic Party operates, honestly. Lastly today, I want to give you, because yesterday it was announced that Jack Dorsey is resigning immediately as CEO of Twitter, a company he co-founded. He's going to sit on the board for, I guess, till early next year or whatever. And then he's going to go off and live in some ashram somewhere and eat peyote. I don't know what he's going to do. It doesn't matter. But it's just another tech story and tech censorship, because I think few people have done more to advance the, well, Google has done more, but Twitter is right there with them to advance censorship on the internet. It's weird. His new replacement over at Twitter, there's a guy whose name I'm not even going to try to pronounce, but he'd said in the past that we need to reimagine what the First Amendment is. We need to reimagine the First Amendment. We don't need to reimagine the First Amendment. We need to destroy anybody who says we need to reimagine the First Amendment. That's what we really need to do. That's the way to protect the First Amendment. But the biggest assault on the concept of free speech, as always, comes from the biggest on the block, Google, now called Alphabet. They own Google, the search engine. They own YouTube. And they have decided that anything that is not, and you play the audio yesterday of Fauci going, I am science. You're criticizing me. You're criticizing science. And you think, my God, what an arrogant SOB. What a jackass. And you're right. You're absolutely right about that. But you think, how does somebody get that polluted and perverted? And it's because you have one of the biggest companies in the world, working explicitly to protect you and your sensibilities, making sure that you're not offended by anything, making sure that you're taken care of. And what I mean by that is any disagreement with Fauci, President Fauci, is immediately taken down from YouTube. There's a song by a guy called Five Times August. That is, it's called Sad Little Man. There's nothing Fauci. It doesn't say Fauci in the song. But if you watch the video, it's pretty clear. It's Fauci right there. It's about Fauci. I want to play you a little bit of it and let you hear it, because YouTube doesn't want you to hear it.
Sad little man sitting deep in a lie. He's dead in his soul. Alive, do what he says, not what he do, 'cause the truth is for him and the lie is for you. Sad little man, but he's treated like a god, as the faithless prayer to a fake and a fraud. Worship the man, pledge to his word, one shot, two shot, now you get a third. Sad little man, sad little man, you better run now while you know you can. Sad little man,
clearly about President Fauci. The video makes it unambiguous that it's about President Fauci. Well, YouTube has demonetized it, which is one step away from pulling it down. I recommend you see the whole thing, share it as much as you can, maybe get this guy some money, but people, it's not a bad song. Sad Little Man by Five Times August. Check it out. That's all the time we have for today. Appreciate you listening. Probably offended you today. Maybe do it again tomorrow. Thanks for listening. See you then.